got a lot tied up inside. Got Jesus on your mind.
Hey guys, this is Diane. I am in Willow, Alaska, and I am joined by my co-host
Todd in Los Angeles.
And you are listening to yet another episode of This Conversation Rocks.
Although this episode's a little bit different. This one would be technically 2016-4-1-A-B. Something like that, right? And the reason, but the reason is special is it's going to be short. We are recording on Sunday, and we are recording in response to the news that Justice Scalia passed away yesterday.
Yes.
And we want to talk about what that means.
And so I want to call it the Ding Dong the Witch is Dead episode, but Todd is being much nicer than I am. So just had to get that out there.
Yeah, you know, I think that, like, Scalia generated a lot of hatred. I will not say that I was a fan of his in any way. In fact, you know, quite the opposite. But what I really want to focus on is this opportunity that has been provided to the left in the form of yet another Supreme Court appointment, which will give Obama actually 3 for his term.
Okay, but before we get into the fact that this is a game changer, because it truly is, it is a gigantic thing, can I just share one of the funniest things that I saw today?
Of course.
Okay, awesome. Let me get there. It's from a Canadian satire site called The Beaverton. Have you ever heard of it?
Not at all.
So I howled when I saw this and thought that we needed to share it with our listeners. So this is the Beaverton, North America's trusted source of news. And the article was written today, and it is entitled, Scalia Declared Dead in Most Popular Ruling of His Career. Thank you. You were supposed to laugh. Okay, so here's the text of the brief obituary for Antonin Scalia. Cibolo Creek, Texas, U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia was ruled dead by officials in West Texas this weekend in what experts and colleagues agree is unquestionably the most popular verdict of the 79-year-old's career. From his almost irrational disdain for same-sex marriage, to his barely concealed contempt for women's reproductive rights, to his callous disregard for black lives, we didn't agree on much, admitted fellow Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. But Justice Scalia has my complete and unequivocal support in his decision to block his own right to continue living. Scalia was found lying unconscious in his hotel room at a 5-star hunting resort northwest of El Paso. His oldest son, Eugene, called it a fitting end to his life and legal legacy. We take tremendous consolation in knowing that Dad died as he lived, he said in a statement, enjoying tremendous luxury at the expense of minorities and the working poor.
Well.
So, I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry.
I don't think you're sorry at all.
No, I'm really not. So I agree. You know, satire aside, mean-spiritedness on my part aside, and I do admit that I am being somewhat mean-spirited about it, this is gigantic.
Yeah, this is really neat. Really important opportunity. Because we would get to flip the court. Assuming that we got, that President Obama is able to get a nominee through the process. And we'll talk about that a little bit here in a second.
Oh, we sure will.
It does mean that we would flip the court, and I want people to think about what 5-4 on our side would have meant in the past 5 years.
Right.
No Hobby Lobby.
No Citizens United.
It is. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is going to retire next year, is her intention, but she's been hanging on because apparently her and Breyer want to abolish the death penalty.
I'm actually incredibly surprised that she outlived Scalia because she's had her fair share of health problems.
I know, but I'm glad she did.
I'm too. I'm not complaining.
Because and it's worth noting, though, it's worth noting that she and two of the other justices are over 75 years old. There is a very good chance that there's going to be 3 more vacancies next presidential
term. Right. So not only do we need to think about the next 11 months, which you and I are going to get into today, but we really do need to think about the 4 years beyond that, at least the 4 years beyond that.
Right.
So I read a really interesting thing, and we might want to start with this. I'm going to kind of spring this on you. This was an article written by Christian Farias. I hope I'm saying his name right. He's the legal affairs writer for the Huffington Post. And he clarified something that I didn't understand. So every vote that has been cast by Justice Scalia that has not yet been revealed, every opinion that he was in the process of writing, basically any work that he's done on the upcoming cases, is now considered null and void.
Right.
So what that means is they can proceed with only 8 justices this summer if there's not another justice who is approved by then, but we run the risk of a 4-4 vote on huge ideological cases like the abortion case that is coming up in front of the court, like the case about public unions that's coming up in front of the court. So this is a really big deal.
Right, and a 4-4 tie will result in the lower court's ruling being upheld.
Yes.
But no precedent being set. And I want to say that we're actually in a better position for that than we were 2 days ago, even if we can't get somebody appointed, right? The fact that things end in a 4-4 tie, which means they can be brought back, you know, can be kicked around again and brought back
to the Supreme Court.
Is actually, you know, at least we're not in a losing position.
Right. Right. And, you know, it really was not looking good, for example. It was really looking not good for the abortion case that was coming up this summer, and a case from your own home state of California, the Fredericks versus California Teachers Association, which is pro-public union, and it was ruled by the lower court in favor of the unions. Scalia had been very adamantly anti-union, and it looked like public unions were going to lose this particular case. And now it's going to be, at minimum, kicked back to the lower court ruling, which supported the union's stance.
Right. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, for those of us who are pro-union, which I am, I think that a 4-4 tie is a win.
You know, it's one of those things, right? I'm not in a union. I've never worked in an industry that is unionized or anything. But all I can really say is that I absolutely support America's right to do whatever the hell they want, which includes organizing to negotiate with management.
You know,
I don't know why this seems like such a foreign concept, you know.
You know, not to get too far off topic, but I've worked in both non-union and union positions, and I have to say I've been in many positions where I felt that as an employee, and as an employee specifically who was in the direct lines of taking care of people's health, that I would be better served and my patients would be better served if I had been working with the protection of a union.
I don't doubt it.
And, you know, I mean, it's an old meme, and it goes way beyond memes in terms of history, but people are right. Unions are the reason we have 40-hour work weeks and weekends, you know?
Just laughing because it's like, what makes people think that we would ever have any of these things if it wasn't for unions? And what makes people think that we would not be able to maintain these things if unions didn't exist?
Right.
Because yeah, well, you know, private sector, right? 40-hour work week, my ass.
It goes back to people voting against their self-interest and supporting large corporations that don't have any interest in them as individuals, but only have interest in them in terms of what they can produce.
Yep.
And people, by and large, don't recognize that. We are losing respect for unions, and we should not. So, anyway.
This message brought to you by Comrade Stalin.
God. Now all of my friends are going to hate me. But, you know, to bring it back to Justice Scalia and his timely or untimely death, depending on who you are, you know, the union in California, the teachers union, profits from his death. They really do. And yep. I think that that's not a bad thing.
No, I tend to agree that the timing of this is quite favorable. Quite favorable to us, with some heavy caveats.
Do you want to talk a little bit about Mitch McConnell's response?
I want to actually talk about what the Constitution actually says.
Oh, good, because then we can talk about the Republican debate from last night as well.
And more specifically, what it doesn't say. What it does not say in the Constitution is how many members of the court there's going to be.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
No, just says that there will be one, appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate.
So how did we decide as a nation that we would have 9 Supreme Court justices?
There were 2 laws. The first one was back at the beginning of the Republic, and it set the court at 6.
Which is not exactly grounds for tie-breaking.
Right, yeah, kind of interesting, right? Yeah, 1 chief and 5 justices. And then later on, and I forget the year, we upped that. There was another piece of legislation. We upped it to 9, and it has been set at 9 for a long, long time.
Interesting.
It also doesn't say that there has to be an appointment made just because a spot is vacant or confirmed. There is nothing in the Constitution that forces anybody to move forward on that. The court only needs a quorum of 6 justices to be able to meet.
Which is why they'll be able to proceed this summer in the absence of a 9th justice.
Right. And historically, research from Bob from Seattle, he was sharing with me, is that it usually takes about 2 to 3 months to get somebody through the process. But there is at least one case of a 2-year no-go.
Wow.
That was Lyndon Johnson, I believe. And his nominee just was blocked and blocked. And then when he decided not to seek re-election, they still sat on it, you know, and ultimately Nixon was the one who got to appoint, which, by the way, that's how Rehnquist got on the court.
Interesting.
So the thing is that I think we need to all be honest here, that given all of that, our desire to have somebody on the court or not have somebody on the court is strictly a matter of partisan politics.
Absolutely. And I was going to say that what you're describing from the Lyndon Johnson administration is a direct lead-in to what has been said by Mitch McConnell in the Republican Party in the last 24 hours, which is that he doesn't think that President Obama has the right to proceed with the nomination, and he doesn't think that any nomination should occur within the next 11 months.
Yeah, except the president absolutely does have the right to do it. In fact, has the responsibility. That is, again, in the Constitution, the prerogative of the presidency.
Well, and so there was another thing that I wanted to pull, and this fits right here. So, and you probably read this already, but Elizabeth Warren wrote a Facebook post that has gone viral in response to Mitch McConnell's suggestion, strongly worded suggestion, that Barack Obama should not nominate anyone in the next 11 months. And she says, "The sudden death of Justice Scalia creates an immediate vacancy on the most important court in the United States. Senator McConnell is right in that the American people should have a voice in the selection of the next Supreme Court justice. In fact, they did when President Obama won the 2012 election by 5 million votes. Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution says the President of the United States nominates justices to the Supreme Court with the advice and consent of the Senate. I can't find a clause that says, except when there's a year left in the term of a Democratic president."
Exactly.
She goes on to say, Senate Republicans took an oath just like Senate Democrats did. Abandoning the duties they swore to uphold would threaten both the Constitution and our democracy itself. It would also prove that all the Republican talk about loving the Constitution is just that, empty talk."
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. I will say that it is all partisan politics.
Sure. I mean, we want someone to be nominated, like, yesterday, and we want them to be confirmed. And absolutely, the people who want to swing the court in a more conservative direction want to sit on a nomination until hopefully in their minds, they have a Republican administration over the next 4 years.
The problem the Republicans are going to have to face is that they're not going to win the presidency for another 25 years. They're not going to win it next year, and they're not going to win it for the next 6 fucking elections after that, as long as they keep bringing forward the same idiots that they're bringing forward.
So I've got to tell you, even some apolitical friends that I was visiting with earlier today, you know, they lean Democratic, but they don't pay attention to what's going on. They were appalled by the debate last night. They said it was like a bunch of kids from high school up on a stage screaming at each other. And I said, you know, the point is that at least when you are watching the Democratic debate, you may not agree with one candidate or another, but you have to admit that they are generally substantive.
Yeah.
They're not just insulting and denying.
So the question is, what's going to happen? Or maybe the question is, how do we make something happen?
Well, I think that's a really good question. I'm not sure that I have an answer. I mean, I think the short-term answer is there is definitely going to be an appointment or a nomination with an eye toward appointing a justice. Is there some way that it will move forward in the next 11 months? I'm not sure. You know, Mitch McConnell is saying that Barack Obama should find a consensus candidate. And two of the names that I saw floated by the Republican Party, I just wanted to die. One was Orrin Hatch, who is currently the oldest serving senator, GOP senator. I am not kidding you. I know. Don't choke on me, man. Do not have a Scalia moment.
That was my impression of Orrin Hatch after 10 minutes on the floor.
And so there are others. The other suggestion that I saw was a woman named Jane Kelly. She currently serves on the 8th District Court of Appeals, and she is a moderate. So there's some suggestion that she would be a consensus candidate.
Right.
But so for those of us who don't want a consensus candidate, for those of us who think that Barack Obama has not just the right, but also the responsibility to nominate and appoint a Supreme Court justice, how do we proceed?
You're going to have to urge the Senate to act.
Which, you know,
that means people, and that means you guys in Alaska more than
right.
Those of us in California, because my two senators are going to already be down with that.
Right. And I'm thinking about my two senators, and they are both going to block, block, block. Lisa Murkowski, Dan Sullivan.
Yeah.
There's no way in hell they're going to offer support to a nominee of Barack Obama.
Unless they start getting enough email from people.
And you know, Red State Alaska ain't going to do that. I mean, I fully understand what you are saying, and I take my responsibility as a citizen very seriously, but I don't think Alaska as a whole is A, paying attention, or B, going to muster the support for the Obama administration to make this move forward, at least not from our state.
Right.
But you're absolutely right. I mean, the bottom line is that people in individual states where they live need to look at the fact that they have only two senators, and they need to be actively working to sway their senator if he or she is not in support of a nominee from the Obama administration.
Of doing their fucking job!
Yeah, here we go again with the Congress getting to sit on one more thing and ignore it.
Well, I mean, this is the whole thing, is that the Republican strategy is to delay until such a time as that they're in control. But
which I don't think that's going to happen. I think you're right.
And more importantly, it's no way to do business. It's no way to do the country's business.
This does go to the deep partisan divide, though, because, you know, you and I say that appointing a nominee and getting things moving forward is doing the country's business. And there are certainly people on the right who would argue that delaying and blocking and preventing a nomination is doing the country's business.
Right.
So it's sad. It really does point to the deep divide in this country.
So put up a moderate.
I don't know, you know, I guess a moderate is better than losing the opportunity, but okay, so I've got a couple of other things that I want to share. I actually looked at an article again on the Huffington Post that talked about some of the different potential nominees, and there are a couple of people who you would think could do well. So the first guy that was on the list was a guy named Judge Srinivasan. I'm not sure if I'm saying it right. He was born in India. He currently serves on the D.C. Circuit Court.
I'm only laughing because Huffington Post clearly stole that from the New York Times article.
Right, no, and actually the person who wrote the HuffPo article was very clear that he had consolidated guesses from several different authors. So okay. I should give him props for that and not suggest that he's plagiarizing anyone. The interesting thing about this candidate, though, is that he had unanimous Senate confirmation in 2013.
Right.
Do you think he's going to get unanimous Senate confirmation now?
Hard to say, right?
Well, I'm thinking but
the thing is,
right.
If you look at that guy, he's been on both sides. He truly, I guess, could be considered a moderate or whatever. He's been on both sides of the coin. You know, some of the cases he's worked on, including he was one of the defense guys for Skilling for Enron.
You know, and so he may be a viable moderate. And the other thing is
yeah,
is
but do you want a guy who worked as Skilling's defense lawyer?
And so here we go. I mean, that not only speaks to the partisan divide between the right and the left, but I think it speaks to the divide that is currently manifesting itself in the Democratic Party. Because we have Hillary Democrats and we have Bernie Democrats.
Right.
And I'm sorry, you know, you're right. I don't really want to see somebody who defended from Enron.
The Republican rank and file shouldn't want to see somebody who did that either, because their people got hurt just as much as ours.
Absolutely. And that, you know, forgive me for being an apologist for Bernie Sanders or not, or don't forgive me.
Don't apologize.
But the thing is that, you know, he really does talk about us. And it's not you as a Republican or you as a Democrat or you as an independent. It's really about the fading middle class that is being hurt by corporations like Enron.
Yep.
And so I think, you know, taking it back to the Supreme Court and taking it back to this guy, for example, it just becomes really illustrative of the divide that's happening in the Democratic Party right now.
Yep.
I did want to throw a couple other names out there because this was a pretty good article. So there's another guy named Paul Watford. He's currently serving on the Ninth Circuit Court. And he was confirmed by the Senate in 2012 with a 61-34 vote, which according to the article I looked at is a filibuster-proof majority. And he's African-American, so there was some reference to him as a legacy candidate, which, you know, I think that's kind of... not very fair to this person as a jurist, but it is a suggestion as to why he would be considered over someone else.
Right.
There's also a guy from California who they say might be in the running. Have you heard of this guy? Mariano Florentino, I'm going to totally butcher his last name, Cuselar?
No.
He is currently a Supreme Court justice in California. Served in both the Clinton and Obama administrations, although it didn't say in the article in what capacity. And obviously he's Hispanic. So again, people are talking about him as potentially game-changing in terms of his ethnicity.
Right. And which would be great if I thought for a minute we could get another minority on the court.
Right. Which, you know, which obviously is what people are kind of pie-in-the-skying right now.
Yeah.
There was another guy that was mentioned, and then I'll let it go. This guy's name is Merrick Garland. There was no comment on him being a legacy candidate or on his ethnicity, so I'm assuming that he's white, which is probably not a fair assumption on my part. He's currently the chief judge on the D.C. Circuit Court, and he actually was briefly considered for a nomination when John Paul Stevens retired in 2010. So there's some thought that he might have a fair chance at getting through as well.
Okay.
You know, obviously, I did some pretty rapid prep for this today, so there's not a lot. I don't have a lot more on these candidates, but they may be some interesting people to watch as this moves forward.
I agree completely, and I just think that we need to move forward. The president has said we're going to move forward. And yeah, regardless of the partisan nature, right, we at least have to do our jobs.
Absolutely. I mean, if you and I went to our jobs and said, nope, I don't agree, I'm not doing this today for 11 months in a row.
Yeah, I'm not doing this today because it's an election year and there may be a different outcome next year.
Yeah.
My boss would not be happy with that.
Right. And I know your boss. He's a pretty reasonable guy. So. Yeah, I'm thinking I wouldn't get very far if I tried to pull that either. You know, for all that I'm leaving the job that I'm in right now, I still don't think I would survive the last 2 months if I tried to pull that.
No, and you shouldn't.
No, I agree. I mean, regardless of politics, regardless of who your senator is or is not, they should all be doing their jobs.
Absolutely.
There's making a lot of money to sit in Washington and do nothing.
There is no earthly reason not to do your job here. other than you're just pissy because you're not getting your way.
Right. That's what I was just thinking.
You know, but I'm sure you can come up with a completely lame argument for why you shouldn't do your job.
Well, like, you can go
it's a common courtesy that we don't nominate a justice during an election cycle. Really? Because when has that happened?
Was that the Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio moment?
That was Mitch McConnell.
Because there was also a moment like that in the debate last night. I think it was Cruz who brought it up initially, but I could be wrong. He basically said something like, you know, for the last 80 years, it's been a precedent not to nominate a Supreme Court justice in the end of an administration. And then John Dickerson from Slate and Face the Nation, who actually was the moderator last night, pointed out that, in fact, Justice Kennedy was nominated in the last year of George Herbert Walker Bush's administration and was confirmed.
Yep.
Even though people who voted for Bill Clinton were holding out and hoping for a sea change.
Right. And this is just the way it goes. But yeah, it's just nonsense. It's a precedent. No, it's not. And by the way, nobody knew that their term was ending.
Right. You know, right.
That would require it to be year 7 of a 2-term president. That's it. The only guys that would know. And by the way, that's only been in effect since the fucking Nixon administration.
And really, honestly, so to give props to, I actually want to say that I think it was Ted Cruz, and I can't believe that those words came out of my mouth yet again. But he actually did admit that if he, it was either him or Rubio, and I'm terrible, I'm confusing them both because they're, like, has-been Hispanic candidates. That's a horrible thing to say.
You're saying they used to be Hispanics and now they're no longer Hispanics?
There you go. Although Ted Cruz did try to prove that he could speak Spanish in the debate last night. Anyway, I believe it was Ted Cruz. I apologize if it was Marco Rubio, who said that he would absolutely, if he were president and in President Obama's circumstance right now, nominate someone for the Supreme Court as well. So I have to at least give him props for admitting that, even though he was still protesting and saying, but President Obama shouldn't do that.
Right. No, it's absurd. It's absolutely absurd, right?
Yeah, and, you know, I think the bottom line, and I think absolutely the reason that we wanted to make this a one-off and turn it around quickly is that this really is important. This really does up the ante in the election. It ups the ante for the next 11 months.
Yeah.
I think that people who are Republican really need to stop and think about how it is going to make them look if they do nothing but obstruct for the next 11 months. I mean, that may be red meat for the base, but it's also going to make them look very bad, and it could play out very badly in the election.
Well, we can only hope.
Well, yeah, because that's probably what's going to happen, right?
If being an obstructionist is your strategy, it is our hope that that strategy fails.
Yeah.
God, I hope nobody is listening to this thinking that we're supposed to be fair and balanced.
We've already made it really clear that that's not our jobs. That's Fox News.
We're honest about what we believe, and we're honest about the fact that we really want to see this happen because, honestly, it could set us up to get rid of the death penalty.
It could set us up to have marijuana legalization equally across the 50 states. It could set us up to actually have rational, reasonable abortion laws. It could set us up to have a supportive climate for unions again. There's so much positive that this could do, at least positive for my worldview.
Right.
You know, and there we go back to that partisan divide again.
Hey, but you know what? We've been trying your worldview, the other side, for quite a while. Your court has been 5-4 against us for quite a while. And honestly, I don't think it's working out.
I'm really not very crazy about Hobby Lobby or Citizens United. I have to say I'm happy about the gay marriage ruling, happy that they upheld the Affordable Care Act, and I was incredibly surprised by that. But, yeah, generally speaking, we've had a very conservative court.
For quite a while.
You know, that's the other interesting thing that I heard. Again, not to take us too far off of the track, but I think, actually, it was Ben Carson who pointed this out, that when the Constitution was written, you know, we were talking about lifespans of 40 to 50 years. So a lifelong appointment was not a big deal.
And Ben Carson now thinks that it is.
Well, of course he now thinks that it is, because there's the potential that they could nominate a 40-year-old D.C. Circuit Court Justice for a Supreme Court life appointment.
I always laugh about the lifetime appointment thing, because, like, how else would you do this? You know, if you make these guys stand for election, that's not going to work.
Right. I mean, we would never have a stable court if that happened, I agree. But I did think it was an interesting point, and I do have to give him some credit for bringing that up, that our technology and our nutrition and our understanding of how human bodies work, it's dramatically changed, and we do have significantly longer lifespans, which means significantly longer appointments for people who get a Supreme Court seat, which makes it even more significant.
Yep. Yeah, we're going to... You know, unless of course we do appoint Orrin Hatch.
Yeah, that's not happening.
We're gonna have this nominee. We're gonna have this justice for, you know, 30 to 50 years.
Yeah.
So.
Because yeah. Truly, I mean, I think that they are going to go for someone who is young. I mean, the first name that I brought up, I want to say that guy is 47. He's in his 40s, so he could be on the court for a really long time.
Yeah.
But, you know, weird stuff happens. I mean, Antonin Scalia had a heart attack. Ruth Bader Ginsburg had colon cancer. I mean, weird stuff happens. There's no guarantees for any of us.
Right.
Anyway, do you have anything else that you want to add?
No, I just want to add that, I mean, again, it's been a historic presidency in terms of the Supreme Court. The ability to appoint 3 justices is pretty amazing.
Yeah. And I think you're right. I think that's going to happen in the next presidency as well.
Yeah.
I think there's a very good chance.
You know, so part of it, you know, the Republicans, of course, are also banking on the fact that they're going to hold on to the Senate, which, you know, they probably will at this moment, but it's not entirely.
It's not guaranteed. I think if we continue to see debate performances, such as the debate performance that we saw last night, not guaranteed.
Right.
You know, not to delve too deeply into our next episode, but I did some reading about whether or not New Hampshire was significant. And one of the things that they said was that the Republican voters said the debate performances are important. I'm just putting that out there. I'll just leave it right here.
Okay. Important for what?
Well, the voters in New Hampshire, the Republican voters in New Hampshire, said it helped them make up their minds at the last minute. And that's why Marco Rubio did so poorly. Just to tease our next episode a little bit.
Absolutely. All right. Yeah, let's go ahead and wrap this thing up.
So, you know what? I do actually happen to have a Neil Gaiman quote just for this opportunity.
For Supreme Court Justice... Excellent. What do we got?
Well, interestingly enough, it's not from Death, which I kind of assumed that it would be, but I found this and really liked it. It's from Good Omens, which is the book that was written by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett.
Oh, man, it is a classic.
It is a classic book. Yeah.
If you haven't read it, you got
to
read it.
If you haven't read it, you really need to read it to have a good understanding of what Armageddon really means. Okay, so... the quote is, if you stop telling people it's all sorted out after they're dead, they might try sorting it all out while they're alive.
Exactly. Exactly.
So on that note, come on, you guys, let's try sorting this shit out while we are all still alive.
Hey, there's the title for this episode. Sort this shit out while we're still alive.
It's probably a nicer title than the one that I posed. All right. On that note, everybody, have a great few days. We're going to have another episode out this week. And then we will work on New Hampshire, handicapping the upcoming races, and talking a little bit more about what superdelegates mean.
Looking forward to it.
Very good. Take care, Todd.
All right.
Bye. And this your bitter life. Nothing just won't do. The girl pleads, the woman needs a wedding ring.